Welcome to the Scotland Grows Show, the podcast partner of Scotland Grows magazine, which celebrates everything that is good in Scottish gardening, as we join gardeners around the country picking up tips, plant recommendations and stories along the way. I'm MT O'Donnell, publisher of Scotland Grows magazine and your host for this adventure. Kate McClory is a breath of fresh air to the Scottish horticultural industry, having left a high-powered IT career to turn her gardening hobby into a new career. Completing the RHS Level 2 with distinction, she then did a six-month course at the Royal Botanic Garden Edinburgh in practical gardening to help back up the theory, followed by a RAGS placement, that's Work and Retrain as a Gardener scheme, at Flora's Castle in Kelso, where she is now Assistant Head Gardener and couldn't be happier. Kate was the winner of the inaugural Scottish Garden Design Competition at Scone Palace Garden Fair in 2023 and has entered the competition again this year as she extends her gardening design and plantswoman skills. And we get to find out, after winning the competition last year, what makes her want to enter it again. This series of the Scotland Grows Show is sponsored by Roots, a subscription from National Trust for Scotland, which celebrates Scotland's flora in the form of a Roots pack sent to you every 6 weeks, containing Scottish seeds to grow at home for £6 a month. Sign up today at nts.org.uk/roots and use the code GROWS24 to receive an extra packet of seeds in your first delivery. Kate, I'm delighted to have you with us today on the Scotland Grows Show and to talk about, we have so much to talk about. We've got to talk about your change of career into horticulture, what your job involves now, and of course, your design skills, which came to the fore last year and which we're going to hear a lot more about. So welcome to the Scotland Grows Show.
Thank you very much. I am delighted and a bit scared to be here.
Don't be scared. People who listen to the show are gardeners around Scotland and further, right around the world, but don't be scared by that. But a podcast chat is great because people can take it with them into the gardens while they're pottering about or into the greenhouse and hopefully just be inspired by other people in horticulture and just about people's gardens and plant choices. And you've got so much that you will inspire people about. So let's get right into it.
Okay.
Let's go back, Kate, to the start of your horticultural career, which wasn't straight out of school. You are a career changer. You left a very high-powered job in IT. So what made you want to put that all aside and pursue a career in horticulture?
Well, I'd always loved gardening. So my earliest gardening memory is actually with my granddad. He was a great sort of allotment gardener. And I think that's what initially got me into gardening. I've always had my own little gardens. Even when I had flats in London, I always had pots and grew herbs and veg and tried to do whatever I could, even though most of it got stolen or vandalised along the way, which wasn't very nice. And then, as you say, I had my job in IT. It was going great. But it just got to the stage where I knew that I wasn't fulfilled and I wasn't happy. And my happy place, more and more, I was finding was in my garden. And so one day I just decided, right, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm not at home. You know, I'm not enjoying it anymore. The thrill, it had gone out of it as well to a certain extent. There was a lot of travel. I just wasn't enjoying it. And so I bit the bullet, did some research, and decided that if I was going to be a horticulturalist or a plantswoman or a gardener, whatever you call it, garden designer, then I was going to make that a career rather than a hobby. And so I made the decision, signed up for the RHS course, and started from there.
And did you find it hard then to retrain?
I did. I didn't find the retraining itself hard. I loved every minute of that. I think what I found hard initially, and I think for anyone that picks horticulture as a career, we all find it's a profession and there are real skills involved. But the shock is you're not treated as others are in a profession. You know, so the differential in terms of salary That was one thing that was a big consideration for me. It was a massive difference in sort of lifestyle and the expectations, you know, that we'd had, and my husband especially had had before with the other job. So that was a big change. And I think if anyone's thinking of retraining, you know, and taking it up as a career, you do need to consider that. You need to consider how you're going to change from having a more regular income to sometimes if you're doing something, you know, as your own business, the income's less steady and it will be less even if you get a full-time job. It's not paid in the same way. The other thing that was hard for me was the weather, the fitness levels, but I was really worried about would I be fit enough to do a gardening job. I didn't want to be, and because I'm a bit older, I didn't want to be the gardener in the corner of the garden who couldn't lift the bags of compost and couldn't actually do the job. So I signed up for a gym and I actually did a training program to make sure that I was fit enough to do the job. And I don't think you can underestimate, you know, it is a physical job and you are out in all weathers. I love it. People say to me, you know, in the winter, oh, you must hate it. I just love it. I still can't believe people that knew me before and know me now said they never thought that I would ever sort of do this job or get through it or stick at it. I think the weather and stuff like that doesn't bother you if you love it, but it is hard at first and it is a change. And if you're an older career changer, just the whole thing of going back to school and learning again and not being, you know, the person that's the go-to person and people ask, you're having to ask other people. That's quite hard to relearn as well. Just learning how to learn again was quite hard at first, I found, but I'm really glad I did it and I enjoyed every minute. It was well worth it.
Gosh, there's some really great points there, Kate, for anyone thinking about retraining into a career in horticulture. And I suppose one that people wouldn't think on is the one that you talked about there, is being physically fit to do the job. Now, not all jobs in the industry or in the field require physical fitness, but if you want to be out there physically doing the job, yeah that's a really good point that you took that on board as part of your training as well. It wasn't just the academic theory and the horticultural practice. You actually went out and thought, I need to make my body physically fit for this. Mm-hmm.
And it made a huge difference, definitely. When I started with as a rags trainee, it was only 2 days a week. But when I started my first 2 weeks, it was actually when we had that really awful storm a couple of years ago. So I had the ordeal by wind and hail and everything. And I slept. I literally would come home and go to bed at about 8 o'clock at night and sleep all the way through. So that's another thing I think for people to adjust to, just the timings. You get up a lot earlier, you know, and you go to bed a lot earlier as well.
But your body's ready for it.
Yeah.
So what was your career path then back into this retraining? So you did your RHS level 2 certificate.
Yes. So I looked at everything. And I think one piece of advice I'd have for people, this is something I've just learned. I didn't have this in mind when I picked my training, is there's so many different aspects to horticulture. You know, there's like the landscape design or garden design or gardening or, you know, and I think I didn't have a clue, which I thought I was wanted to be a garden designer, you know, the next Dan Pearson. But actually, when I started doing the job, I found I actually loved gardening and getting my hands in the soil. So I'm glad I picked the RHS course, because that gives you a good, for whatever you pick, whatever avenue you go down, you need those basics. So that was great for me in terms of the basics and the theory and, you know, about soil and pests and diseases and how to do things. It gave me more confidence, I think, more than anything else, that I actually did understand how to sow a seed and why plants did certain things and their habitats, etc. And then as that course went on, I realized, although it was great, it was all theoretical. It was a lot online and there wasn't a lot of actual hands-on experience. And I wanted to get that. So I signed up for the six-month course with the Botanic Gardens in Edinburgh. I lived in Edinburgh then. And that was great. That was over the weekends. And it reinforced the theory in the RHS course. So that was fine. They sort of dovetail with each other. But then I came across the RAGS scheme. And that really resonated me because that was working for people like me, slightly older, you know, who wanted to retrain as a gardener. And that's really what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to work in heritage gardens as well. I knew that I wanted to get involved with historical gardens. That is an interest of mine and that kind of planting. And they tended to place you in gardens like that. And so I was really lucky to get the placement at Flores Castle. And you work for 2 days a week for a year. It's a year's placement with the head gardener and the team there, and they train you on the job. So that was a real learning curve. So everything that I'd learned in theory with the RHS, I started my job here at Flores, and about 3 weeks in, I think I said, oh, yes, so, oh, I know how to do this. It was peaches or tying in the peaches. I remember he just looked at me, the head gardener, with a look of disdain and said, oh, no, we don't do it that way. No, no, no. So although the basics are there, actually doing the job and picking up on all that sort of 30 plus years of experience that some of the people around me have got is amazing. And it's great to work in a garden like that. I think that made the real difference to my training was that RAG scheme. And then after that, I think because now I know a bit more about what I'm doing and I'm enjoying it. Flores is obviously an old garden and I really enjoy that. And I had that interest in those heritage gardens. So now I've taken another step forward and I'm studying again with the Botanic Gardens in Edinburgh to do their diploma in the history of garden design. So that's looking at the historical gardens right from Roman times up to date. And I've just started that and I'm really enjoying it. And I think that will inform me a lot more for some of the work. There's quite a lot of renovation work to do at Flores. And I think that will really help me as well. It's a 2-year course to look at the history of gardens and to put the plantings into contexts and how they would have been. So I'm really enjoying that as well. So it's constant learning, constant learning.
That is so interesting. And actually, let's put a date in, Kate, for a future podcast episode where we just look at the history of gardens and historical settings, because we could literally go off on a tangent now, because I find that really interesting as well, and that what we've lost and what we've retained.
Yeah.
And some of the knowledge, that not just the planting, we've lost some of the knowledge that we had hundreds of years ago. And
definitely.
And there's almost, you know, a rediscovery of some of that knowledge. And you think, well, Why was that lost? What were the circumstances around that? I certainly won't ask you when you sleep, because you're definitely a woman on a mission, and you've not just retrained into horticulture, you've literally embraced it.
Mm-hmm. I do love it. I think you're very lucky if you find a career that you really love. I do wish I'd done it years ago. Probably wasn't brave enough then. And you get into a rut with what you're doing. But yeah, I love it. So I want to just do as much as possible in the time I've got left, as they say.
So tell us a bit then about your work at Flores Castle. I guess no 2 days are ever the same.
No. I'm the assistant head gardener there now. So that comprises the private gardens for the Duke and Duchess and the public gardens that people can come in and visit. So originally, there's about 7 acres of walled garden. And that used to be a mixture of fruit and veg and glass houses. And then now the walled garden is a flower garden and a potager, a kitchen garden for people to see. And the old ornamental flower garden and where the glass houses used to be is now parterre area with apple trees and walks and things. So there's a team of 4 of us, 3 full-time and 2 part-timers that are split in 2. And I've started last year a volunteers program, and they come in and help us over the summer period as well, because it's a large area to maintain. And I look after the team of volunteers and the team of gardeners that are out with me. And I work closely with Simon McManus, who's the head gardener at Flores, and he oversees everything. So he looks after the glass houses, the gardens, and also all the grounds as well. So he's got a full-time job. So I think he's quite glad for me to take away some of the people aspect, which is with my previous career, what I had experience in. No 2 days are the same. There is a rhythm to it. You know, we have our seasons. So everyone thinks that in the winter, we just sit in the bothy and have tea. Winter's our busiest time. There's a lot of heritage fruit trees in the garden at Flores. So a lot of pruning, a lot of roses, rambling roses that seem to just go mad. And then every year we have to redo again. So mulching, I think traditionally Flores was very much a chemical-led garden, shall we say? And that's changed dramatically. So we've changed a lot. And because of climate change as well, we've changed everything we use in the garden now is organic, very bio-friendly. We try to use the absolute minimum of chemicals. In fact, we really don't use any now. We're changing the planting in some areas as well. So we've got quite a bit of renovation to do with some of the borders that hadn't been touched for quite a long time. So there's loads to do. And that's, I think, why I love it so much. There's just no 2 days the same. And they've been great with me as someone who has relatively little experience, really. They have been really trusting of me and have allowed me to redesign areas of the garden, have let me suggest design ideas, have let me replant areas and then come out and sort of, okay. But they've been really, really, they're a great employer, I must admit. I really, really enjoy working there. And it's that constant dilemma with Flores, I think, that it's a public garden. People can come in and see the gardens, but it's also a private garden because it belongs to the Duke and Duchess of Roxburgh. So there's that constant balance between making sure it looks the very best it can be for the public, but also remembering that ultimately it's someone's private garden and it has to suit them and what they want as well to see in their own garden. So we've got that constant sort of balancing act and input as well to deal with.
Well, it definitely sounds like you're in the right place because you sound so enthusiastic about everything that you're doing there. So if someone were to come along to visit at Flores Castle in the gardens, are there particular highlights or particular things that they should definitely look for?
Yeah, one of the key challenges for us is that it's very based on herbaceous borders. So in the winter, unless you really want to see us tying in plums and roses and things, there's not a great deal to see, but we're changing that. And that's why we're doing some of the replanting to have more all year round interest for people. But from now onwards, it's amazing. In the spring, we have the spring border, which speaks for itself. And then really, I think the gardens, I would say, are at their peak, May, June and onwards. We have a bed, a whole border, which is just peonies, nothing else. It's absolutely stunning. When I first started working there, I think every day I was just looking at them and smelling them. And they're just amazing. And they've been there for years and they're so beautiful. We have another bed that's similar to that, which is all delphiniums. So they're almost like our show borders. Mm-hmm. And they were traditionally planted up by one of the previous head gardeners to showcase their skills. So they're lovely borders just to look at. The borders move through. So we have a spring border, then the summer border, and then that moves round to the hot border, which is at its best, unsurprisingly, sort of September, you know, August, September, October. As the climate's changing in the garden, interestingly enough, the hot border decided to be the summer border last year, and the summer border flipped over to be the autumn border. But they're just, I mean, when they're at their full peak, you're just enveloped in flowers. It's just wonderful. Some of the new areas we've got a new herb garden, and we planted up just over a year ago now an area which was completely deserted in the garden, which is the north-facing, east-facing corner. Very miserable, but we've planted that up as a shade-loving garden, and it's a bit of a nod to, you know, the Victorians who loved their ferns. So it's a stumpery fern garden with water, because there's no water in the garden apart from this one area, and that's been amazing. People have loved that because it's completely different. So I think we're getting to the stage where there's lots of different things for people to see now, and we want to expand that. We've got an RHS trial kicking off this year, which is actually for gingers. which should be interesting. Yeah, so Hedy Kyam. So they want to see, the RHS want to see with climate change, how well they do in a more northerly climate. So if people are interested in that, it's going to get planted late April, May. It will be in situ with us for 3 years with all the different varieties. And it will be compared with another garden down south. I'm not sure who they've picked yet for the garden down south, to see how the gingers compare and how they do in the different climates and the gardens. So that will be interesting to see how that works as well.
And it's interesting to know that all that type of work is going on, isn't it? Because that can inform practice across the whole of the UK.
Yeah, absolutely. We've just finished. We had a previous trial with the RHS, which was the Hemerocallis trial. So we're waiting to see who won the award of garden merit there. I had my particular favourites, but they haven't been announced yet. So we'll see. But yeah, they're being replaced with the gingers.
That in itself, your day job at Flora's Castle keeps you extraordinarily busy. And you're studying at night for your diploma and looking at the history of gardens. But to add to all of that, last year you decided to design a garden just as you do, Kate, and enter the Scottish Garden Design Competition at Scone Palace Garden Fair. And not only were you selected as one of the 10 finalists, but you actually went on to win the competition.
I still can't believe that. Honestly, still can't believe that.
Oh, it was such a great weekend. So why did you decide then to enter the Scottish Garden Competition at Scone Palace Garden Fair last year? What made you just think, this is it, I want to do this?
I like designing gardens. I've done it for myself, you know, and my friends and the little bits I've done at Floors. So I enjoy that aspect of it. And I saw the advertisement come up. I saw it on Instagram, actually, you know, and they were saying, oh, any gardener can apply. And I looked and I thought, oh, that's not too big. I think one of the things that appealed to me was the size. It wasn't a massive show garden. And then I just put it away in the back of my mind and thought, no, you can't possibly do that. They'll all be proper garden designers. Are you crazy? And then I was on holiday actually with my sister for her 50th birthday. And I was telling her about it. I don't know how it came up. It must have come up again on the Instagram feed. And she said, well, why don't you go in for it? And I said, oh, I can't. And she said, oh, don't be ridiculous. You know, you've got an idea. You know, what would you do? And I said, well, it really annoys me when I see courtyard gardens, or in Edinburgh, I lived in Edinburgh, and all the little bits where people put their bins and things, and they're all dank and no one thinks they can have a garden there. And I said, but you can. And she said, well, why don't you do that then? You know, you've done that in your own garden, because I had a tiny little patio garden at home. So I said, oh, okay, yeah, I can do that. I think, and that was the thing, she convinced me, come on, just, you know that, just do that. And I said, oh, well, I won't get through. So I literally, because I was on holiday, I drew the design on holiday. It was 24 hours before the closing date, sent it off to Brian at Scone Palace and said, oh, I hope this is okay. It was like a photo. And I didn't hear back and I thought, oh, you know, I won't get through. And then I did. And I was amazed. And then all the hard work and the reality actually hit home that my design had got through. Yeah.
But it went on to win because it was such...
It did.
It was such an inspiring garden when you saw it fully built. You were doing what you said you were doing. You were trying to show how these difficult, shady spaces could be turned into havens for wildlife and for people, and it all came together and worked really well on the day.
Thankfully.
Thank
you. I think if anyone's contemplating doing it, don't underestimate the time. I definitely underestimated the time that plants, they can be quite tardy, can't they? You know, in my mind, I had the perfect foxglove. And then, of course, they didn't grow. And so I actually ended up digging foxgloves out of my mum's garden to put in to mine, because the ones I'd done from seed were still tiny. So it's stuff like that. But I really enjoyed the whole experience, actually. It was stressful. And by the middle of day two of the build, I just thought, this is a disaster. And my son said to me, Mummy, he said, don't look at anyone else's garden. Stop it. Just as he's very sort of IT, control your controllables. Don't look at anything else. He said, just do what you're here to do. And that sort of, right, okay. And I just got on and did it. And I think I love the garden. It's still there. Still have it. And it still looks lovely. And it worked. And I hope it resonated with people, because I was really passionate about, even if you've got a tiny space and it's shady and you think nothing will grow, I knew that every single one of those plants would grow in those conditions. And I knew that that was one of the things the judges said to me, you know, that they'd looked at, and they knew that too. So I think that probably helped that I'd picked the right plants as well.
The planting combinations worked. And as you said, it's an attainable size. It was 2.4 by 2.4 metres. So the idea behind that was to hopefully inspire people that this is achievable in your own space.
Yeah.
I mean, you managed to fit a chair and everything in that space.
I know. Well, I do like to sit down. But the whole thing was, I wanted to show people that you can have, because I had a two-tiered, like raised beds, I want to show people that even if you haven't got a lot of space, you can actually grow quite a lot of plants, and you can use pots. But I don't think there's much point in having a garden unless you can sit in it. You know, at the end of the day, I wanted to show that you could come in, sit down, have your glass of wine or your cup of tea or whatever, and just be enveloped in a really lovely space that's actually in the middle of a city. And you can get that connection with nature, and you don't have to live in the middle of the countryside to be able to do that.
And I think you literally nailed that, because your garden looked like, well, I wanted to sit on it with a glass of wine.
Thank you.
and I was there right through the build until, you know, all the results were announced, and you completely nailed your brief. You set out to do something and you did it, and you won. And not content with winning the inaugural competition last year, you've decided, Kate, to enter again this year with a completely different design. And not only that, because clearly listeners can hear now that you don't like to make life simple for yourself. So you've decided to enter again this year, having 6 weeks ago just had a hip operation.
Yeah.
So what's possessed you then to enter the competition again this year?
I think I'm probably just a mad woman, actually. No, I actually did think, I really enjoyed last year. And then I regretted that after last year, I hadn't maybe, no, this sounds awful, but sort of done enough with it. Because people had come up to me and said, oh, could you do a garden for me? Do you have a card? Do you do this? I was so ill-prepared. I had nothing. And people were asking me for the sort of design of the garden and the planting. So I actually felt that I hadn't done myself justice. Does that make sense? Last year. I haven't done it again this year. I fully expect not to win again. But I wanted to show, I saw that there was a theme this year to the gardens, and that there wasn't the year before. And the theme was actually healing. That was what resonated with me, because I knew I had this operation coming up, and I knew it was going to potentially, you know, how am I going to do my job now? Was it going to create problems? What sort of things could I find that I could still do while I was healing? And then I thought, well, maybe it would be quite nice to design a garden that could show people that even if you've had, which I suppose is a big operation, that you can still, you know, design, build and grow a garden that you can physically do if you've undergone an operation. But not only that, that after the operation, you've got a beautiful place to sit in that is comfortable, you know, and that you can heal in as well. So I think it was the two things. Can I design a garden that actually you can build and grow yourself if you are healing? But conversely, if you don't want to build and design it yourself, is it going to be a beautiful place for you to sit in to recuperate in? And so they were the two things that I looked at. I did email Scone Palace to say, would I be allowed to enter again? Because I thought I didn't want to put them in an awkward position, really. And they basically said, well, you know, let's see what your design is like. And if it's any good, you'll get through. And if it isn't, you won't. So fair enough. So I sent my design in and I'm delighted to say it has got through. And so now the panic starts all over again. The actual theme of it, although it's healing, I've based it on a medieval physics garden. So I've taken, because I'm doing the garden history course, the medieval gardens, I've never really knew very much about them. And now I've learned a little bit. Some of their sort of design principles and characteristics really resonated with me. And we still use them today, but they had this really great thing of turf seat. So seats that are basically earth mounded up, covered with grass, but how comfy. And then they put little flowers or so. That's one of the things I've got. I'm going to try and build these turf seats that you can just lounge in and feel that you're immersed in your flowery mead and surrounded by beautiful herbs. So the garden is all going to be herbs and medicinal plants and edibles, and showing people as well that some plants they wouldn't think were medicinal actually are, and that you can have a beautiful garden that's still useful as well. So same sort of theme as before, quite sensory, smells nice, looks nice, but easy to look after, not difficult for people.
I'm so looking forward to seeing this design and everyone's again. There was such a buzz about the Scone Palace Garden Fair last year because I think having you all there building your gardens, which then were obviously on show for the public, just added a whole different dimension to it. And people were genuinely, as you say, talking to you, interested, wanting to know what that plant is and would that work well in my situation. And it was lovely to be involved in all that. So can only wish you
all the gardens were beautiful. They were all beautiful. I must have, I think everyone really won on that day. They were stunning. They really were.
What you all pulled off in that, you know, the short time you had to build it was quite astonishing. It was just a joy to watch. I mean, not a joy to watch you all running about like headless chickens, but a joy to watch the process of the gardens coming together and then you all being able to stand back, let the judges in, let the public in, and each garden just stood as a little mini garden on its own. It was wonderful, really wonderful.
Yeah. I'm so glad that they're doing it again this year. I think it's great for people locally as well. Everyone talks about, you know, the Chelsea Flower Show, but I think it's great that Scotland's got something that we can rival them.
We can build on it year on year.
Yeah.
And a small garden design size that's a bit more attainable, maybe.
Yeah, very much so. I think that some of the show gardens you see, I mean, they're wonderful, but you can't replicate that in your own garden. You can take ideas away, great. But, you know, I think the beauty of the gardens last year and hopefully this year as well is that any visitor can see those gardens and think, oh, I can do that. You know, that's achievable. I can build that myself. I can take a little element of that one and I can replicate that in my own garden. I think that's what makes them more accessible for people as well.
And also in terms of accessibility, you all as the garden designers were there and were on hand to speak to people. So when people specifically wanted to know about if that would work in sun or you've got it in shade, would it work in?
Yeah.
You were on hand to tell them. You were also on hand to tell them why you created the garden, what the theme of it was, what inspired you. So it was lovely to have actual physical conversations with the designers.
Yeah, it was. I loved the whole thing, actually, as much as I hated it as well. Very stressful. I did love it. And I think that's probably why I've done it again this year. It was just lovely to meet all the other gardeners as well and the other designers and all the people involved. And I met my hero. I met George from the Beechcroft Grove Garden. That was the highlight of my weekend.
Well, George is back this year again on the Friday, so we'll be sure to direct him your way.
Oh, thank you.
So how do you juggle all of this with time in your own garden?
It's strange because with the job, now I'm the assistant head gardener at Floors, it's a full-time job. And so another big sort of change in lifestyle was that earlier this year, I had been commuting for the past couple of years from Edinburgh, driving every day down to Kelso. That probably didn't help the hip either, to be honest. So we bit the bullet. My husband's a musician, so he can sort of pretty much work anywhere. And we moved from Edinburgh down to Kelso to the estate in March last year. So that was a big change. And as part of that, I now have a big garden. So I had a little patio courtyard garden in Edinburgh. So actually the time there was fine. I now have a big garden and I've spent the past year looking at it, literally looking at it. It had nothing done to it. It's surrounded by woodland. So it's a completely new challenge. And I have started, after looking at it for a year and working out, you know, what's there and what isn't there, I do want to create a garden here. And I've started, so I'm just in the process now of starting to design this new garden. How I will make the time to do that, I'm not 100% sure, but I will. And my husband is very amenable to digging.
Yeah.
There's quite a lot of that to do, but I'm going to take it in small sections. But I think if you love gardening, and I do love the gardening part of it, I love actually the plants. I love the propagation. I love growing. So I think that probably makes it easier for me. And now I've got a bigger garden. I've got a greenhouse, so right. I can start propagating properly. So I've got an idea in my head of how I want to do it. And we'll see how that pans out with time. But suddenly it's going to need a bit more time, I think, than my previous garden. So weekends will be fully taken up in the garden. But I don't mind. I love it.
So what kind of plants would you like to fill it with?
Well, it's got several different areas. I mean, one area sort of over there is sort of west facing. And I can have quite a big border there. But it goes onto farmland. So I'm quite interested in creating more of a sort of naturalistic planting. So lots of drifts of grasses, you know, and herbaceous, so a sort of Pieto Udolf type thing with that, because that will merge into the landscape beyond, which is all fields, grassland, and quite natural, and the hill goes up. So I don't want anything too ornamental there because I don't think it will look right. But then there's another little area where I've got the wall of where Flores Castle is, the house that I've been very lucky to be sort of allowed to stay in, is part of the estate. So it's got the wall of the estate running down on one side and it's curved. And that, I think, lends itself naturally. I want to develop there. That's south-facing and it's surrounded by sort of shrubs and things. I want to have a white garden in there with all my roses and things. So try and get it a bit more compartmentalized. And then over in the other corner, it looks out onto the woodland. So there, I think I'm going to have more of a shade garden and a woodland type garden and a pond and try and get some wildlife in that way. It's got a little patio bit, so I can have my patio party bit there. And then the first thing I've done, which we have done here, is previously, way before the person that lived here before, but one of the old head gardeners actually lived in this house, in one of the lodge houses, and his old vegetable garden was still laid out, although it was all overgrown and everything. And so I've spent the past year, we've brought that back to life, first of all. So we've got a real veg patch. So I'm going to have a kitchen garden. I'm so excited.
Gosh,
I actually planted a red currant this morning. So, wow.
So you've got so much going on in it. And it sounds like lots of exciting possibilities. I'm already imagining this white garden against the backdrop of the wall. I mean, wow, that's just going to look amazing.
I'm really excited for that. I'm going to take it slowly. And that's the one I want to get done this year. And then I'll get at least sort of laid out and planted up. I think it'll probably, in 10 years' time, we'll see what it looks like.
So you're going to absolutely hate my next question, Kate, which is the question everyone to the podcast is asked. If you could only have three plants then in the garden, no one wants to narrow it down, but if you could only have three plants, which ones would you choose and why would you choose them?
Right. I had to think about this. It's so difficult because, but There is one that consistently, ever since my granddad, actually, I've loved, and I cannot pronounce it, so I apologise to all the proper gardeners listening. But its common name, it's a peony, and it's called Molly the Witch. And it's, I don't know if this is the right pronunciation, it's Peonia, Peonia Molokosovicii. If anyone wants to look it up, it's Molokosewitchi. And that's why it's unpronounceable. So Molly the Witch. It's really early peony. It doesn't look like, you know, your traditional big blousy peony. It's a pale lemon colour. It's single flowered and it's always got this like bluish foliage. It comes up. It's up now. If you've got it in your garden, the red stems, they look beautiful, and they're massive, sort of lemon, and it's just the color of it. I just love it. It's so unusual and it's so early, and it's just beautiful. So that would be my first one, and I've taken it with me. I know peonies hate to be moved, but this one I've taken chunks of it with me every time I've moved, and I dug my peony up from Edinburgh and I brought it with me, and it's coming up with me now already. So that's certainly one I would pick. Second, it's quite traditional. And although I do embrace all the sort of new plantings and the grasses, I can never imagine a garden without roses. I particularly like climbers and ramblers just because of the height that they add, although they are vile, evil creatures in the winter to prune. But my favourites are, I like Shropshire Lass, the Generous Gardener, I think is a great one. But there's one that I found since I started working at Floors, which is called Compassion. And it's almost like a hybrid tea looking flower. I know it's not particularly fashionable, but it's really flat against a wall. And it's for picking, you know, it's stunning. It smells gorgeous. And it's pink, but it's almost got a lemony tinge to it. So it's not pinky rose. It's just, so I think that's probably my favourite at the moment, Compassion. People should look that up. It's quite old-fashioned, but it's great. And thirdly, lilies. Lilium regale. There's nothing better. If you've got a small, and for my white garden, it will be full of lilies. I mean, just the scent and the smell, I just love them. So that would definitely always be my third choice, lilies.
That would be a beautiful garden to sit in, wouldn't it? Surrounded by peonies, roses and lilies. It would just, it would be gorgeous. It would be an overload
for one month.
Consensus. Yeah. But that's okay. No one said I have to have year-round interest. But yeah, for that 1 month, you would have just something beautiful to look at. And the smells, that would be.
Yeah, I do love, I think for me, the garden is all about the smells. I think there's no point having a garden if you can't smell it.
Well, that'd be a very nice garden to sit in with it. Very nice choices, Kate.
Well, you're invited to the white garden when it's done.
Yes, I can't wait. I'll bring my own chair, will I?
I have one. I have one.
So you're starting this new garden and you've got all of this experience now from everything that you've done. What would be the best piece of advice you would give to new gardeners or people who, you know, they're looking out at this time of year on a barren landscape and just want to get started? What's your best piece of advice?
I think the main thing is do try it. I was really worried when I made the career change that I would be regarded as some sort of interloper, you know, and I get things wrong, and I was really frightened to do anything. And the one thing I have learned is the plants are really resilient, and you have to do something pretty drastic to them to kill them. It's amazing how resilient they can be. So I think my first piece of advice would be definitely try it, and don't be too worried about doing something wrong. Because you learn from that, and ask. I actually found that people were really, really supportive. I thought at first, oh, it's very cliquey. Yeah, they all seem to know each other. I sound a bit of an idiot. But I've actually found that if you just ask, people then are lovely. It's if you don't ask, you know, you don't find anything out. So I would definitely say just try it. You might come up with a great idea that no one else has thought of. And then everyone else will learn from that. And the second thing is a cosmetic thing. I always wear my lipstick in the garden, but always, so always have a lip balm and always put sunscreen on, because it's amazing how you can get burnt even when it's not sunny. Dr. Brandt said, always wear sunscreen. The only time you don't wear sunscreen is if you need a torch. Madonna says that as well.
Well, that is good advice, because gardeners sometimes don't realise it's all the bending over that your back can get hit by the sun, and your shoulders and the backs of your arms, you know, if you're bending over without protection as well all the time.
Yeah, it's amazing. It gets you in really odd places. So that would, definitely wear sunscreen.
Some great advice there, Kate. So thank you so very much for making time to chat to us today. I cannot wait to see you at Scone Palace Garden Fair on the 31st of May and the 1st of June, and to see your fabulous garden this year. Knowing all the hard work that went into all of the gardens last year, you and I know what's ahead of you this year.
I know.
But it will just be wonderful to see it all there. And people can obviously come along to the event, and you can come and talk to Kate directly about her garden, about the planting, about her experience as a career changer, and everything that she's talked about today. So form an orderly queue for Kate.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted that you asked me. Thank you.
I'll catch up with you soon then, Kate. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks very much. Bye.
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 Thank you for tuning in to another episode of The Scotland Grows Show. Don't forget to follow us on social media by searching for Scotland Grows across Facebook, Instagram or LinkedIn, and sign up for our mailing list at scotlandgrowsmagazine.com so you never miss an episode of The Scotland Grows Show. And if you're not yet subscribed to receive Scotland Grows Magazine, 6 times a year, straight to your inbox, literally packed with Scottish gardening goodness, then be sure to do so as soon as possible, and you'll even get access to all the back issues. Details can be found on our website at scotlandgrowsmagazine.com, across our social media feeds, and in the show notes for this episode. The information on National Trust for Scotland's Roots subscription is also in the show notes, and they would appreciate your support to help National Trust for Scotland's gardens and design landscapes thrive. I look forward to you joining me on the next episode of the Scotland Grows Show as we celebrate Scottish gardening.